This is Amarins. Welcome to episode 36 of my podcast. It's Friday, August 31st, 2007. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. I moved to New Zealand in 1995 to be with my partner, and that's essentially what this podcast is all about. Now, today being August 31st is considered by many of us to be the last day of winter in the Southern Hemisphere. Some people prefer to wait for the equinox, which is next month, but a lot of people, me included, consider today to be the last day of winter, and, of course, tomorrow to be the first day of spring, which is, in my opinion, of course, a wonderful thing. But this past week, I had some computer issues, and I was also a little under the weather earlier in the week. You can probably still hear some croakiness in my voice. So this episode is a bit of a mixed bag. First up, there's a new tourism commercial for New Zealand coming soon, and it's sparked a small controversy. I talk about that at 4 minutes 28 seconds. At 6 minutes 32 seconds, I talk about the poll in my blog for your favorite Kiwi and tell you who those people were. Around 10 minutes 23 seconds, I give a little more and simpler information about the structure of local government, which of course was the topic of last Friday's episode. What do Australians think of America and Americans? At 11 minutes 59 seconds, I'll tell you. Comments are up next at 15 minutes 37 seconds. Then I'll tell you the whole story of why I didn't podcast on Tuesday. That's at 23 minutes and 6 seconds. And finally, last week was my man Nigel's birthday. And we celebrated it actually on the weekend with his sister and niece. We went to a Thai restaurant and had a lovely dinner. And that was essentially it, because his birthday fell during the week. He had to go to work during the week. Nevertheless, it was his birthday, so a very happy birthday to my wonderful man, Nigel. Well, that little bit of music is the theme song to the Tourism New Zealand commercial for 100% Pure New Zealand. It was written by New Zealand singer-songwriter Dave Dobbin, who has written so much of the popular music in New Zealand that if New Zealand were a movie, Dave Dobbin's music would be the soundtrack. I mean, it's that, his music is that ubiquitous, you could say. Anyway, Tourism New Zealand is about to launch a new commercial campaign. It's to tie in with the Rugby World Cup, which I'll talk about next week. But the new commercial, it starts with an image of New Zealand being pulled from the sea, which is the Maori creation myth, and uses special effects created by Peter Jackson's Weta Digital in Wellington. They're the folks who did the special effects for Lord of the Rings and King Kong and other movies, of course. The new commercial uses a song called Forever Young, which was most recently recorded by Australian group Youth Group. It was used in the American show The O.C., but it was also recorded about 20 years ago by a German group, and I'm sorry, I don't know who it was. Maybe one of my German listeners can tell me, because I'm afraid I don't know. That I played a little clip from, actually just the chorus from Forever Young at the beginning of this podcast. That's the Youth Group version. The commercial version has been re-recorded by a New Zealand group called Pluto. Now, there's been some controversy about this in the media because apparently some people feel that using a song that was most recently recorded by an Australian group will give the Australians something else to make fun of us about. But here's the thing. I think that most of the people who were so concerned that the Australians would make fun of us for using that song were completely unaware that it was actually a remake of an earlier song. And it struck me because I thought to myself, how many times have I heard a song on the radio and the kids are going, oh, have you heard this new song? And I'm thinking, yeah, I heard that new song 20, 30 years ago. But anyway, I don't know when the new commercial is going to be on the website, but I will have a link to the old commercial so you can see it for yourself. Now, speaking of things Kiwi, I had a poll in my blog last week for who's your favorite Kiwi. And as it turns out, I'm your favorite Kiwi, thank you very much. The results of the poll in my blog were that I received 76% of the votes, and second was Sir Edmund Hillary with 23%, third was Peter Jackson with 11%, then Kate Shepherd with 5%, and Lord Ernest Rutherford received no votes at all. And two people actually voted for Sir Ed, but not for me. Imagine that. Anyway, here's something about the people I listed in the poll. Kate Shepherd was a leader of the struggle to win the right to vote for women. As a result of her efforts, the New Zealand Parliament passed the Electoral Act of 1893, which was on September 19th, 1893. So that made New Zealand the first country in the world to grant women the right to vote. She was born in Liverpool in 1847 and emigrated to New Zealand in 1868. She traveled the world for her work, including to the United States, Canada, Europe, but she died in her Christchurch home in 1934, and she is depicted on New Zealand's $10 note. Now, Ernest Lord Rutherford was a scientist who was born near Nelson, here in New Zealand, in 1871. Now, he eventually went to Britain to further his work because at that time there wasn't much a scientist could do, and near the end of 1917, he converted oxygen atoms into nitrogen atoms, which you might think was a big deal, but when he did that, he became the first man to split the atom, which is ironic since New Zealand is now nuclear-free, and maybe that's the reason why he didn't get any votes. But anyway, Rutherford died in England in 1937, and his ashes were interred in Westminster Abbey. And element 104, Rutherfordium, was named after him in 1969, and he's depicted on New Zealand's $100 note. He also did a lot of other things in science. He predicted the existence of electrons, even though he didn't personally discover them, for instance, and a few other bits and pieces, mostly in what we'd now call nuclear physics. But it's probably the connection to splitting the atom that makes people a bit dubious about him nowadays. Next was Sir Edmund Hillary, who was born in Auckland in 1919. On May 29, 1953, he became the first man to climb Mount Everest with Sherpa Tenzing. In January 1958, he completed the first overland journey from Scott Base, Antarctica, to the South Pole. And in the years since, he's worked to better the lives of the people of Nepal. And he was New Zealand's High Commissioner, which is, of course, an ambassador, to India. And that posting includes service to Nepal. He's always been humble and remarkably ordinary. My sister-in-law, who's a teacher, once rang him up and asked if he'd speak to her primary school class, and he was happy to do it. He's widely considered the greatest living New Zealander. He's depicted on New Zealand's $5 note, and is the only other living person to appear on New Zealand currency is Queen Elizabeth, who's on the $20 note. Here's a bit of trivia. Hillary Clinton's first name comes from Sir Ed's last name. And Peter Jackson, of course, is the Academy Award-winning director of Lord of the Rings trilogy, as well as films like King Kong, Beautiful Creatures, the upcoming Lovely Bones. He was born in 1961, and he still lives in Wellington. Actually, I think it's just outside of Wellington, but anyway. But the whole thing was just meant as a bit of a laugh. I obviously didn't really put myself in the same category as those people, at least not yet. If you'd like more information on New Zealanders of the past, you can check out the New Zealand Dictionary of Biography. I'll put a link in the show notes on my blog, amrins.blogspot.com. I actually think I might add a little bit of little history segments from time to time, because I find it interesting. Hopefully you will too. But that's a little bit about the various people who were in that poll. Now, last time I was, of course, was talking about the upcoming local elections. And I read an article about the anticipated turnout, and they said they think it'll be high this year due to some high-profile candidates. I won't bother telling you who, because they wouldn't mean anything to anybody who doesn't live in New Zealand. But anyway, usually the turnout is just about 50%, which is still higher than many American elections, of course. But it's pretty pathetic when you consider that it's a postal ballot. Now, real elections always have a really high turnout in New Zealand, much, much higher than you'd ever see in America. But the article had a summary of what local governments do, and they said it far better than I did last time. So I thought I'd just read that. It's only a couple paragraphs. It's really quite short. It says, "Councils spend $5.3 billion a year, of which just over half is paid by you in the form of rates. They employ 37,000 people and own $79.4 billion worth of assets, including 87% of the country's roads. The 73 city and district councils control civil defense, environmental health, local roads, water systems, building and development controls, and many recreational and cultural facilities. 12 regional councils are responsible for biosecurity control, resource management including water and soil quality, flood and river management, environmental disasters, regional transport planning. That means the people you elect will set the rules that govern many aspects of your life." Ain't that the truth? But anyway, I just thought that that described what councils do a little bit better than I did last time, left it hanging a little bit. Moving across the ditch to Australia now, there was a poll that found that apparently Australians like Americans and the country, but they don't like George Bush. No, that's pretty typical. But all the same, I thought it was kind of interesting. Bush is about to arrive in Australia, I think it's on September 4th, for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Leaders Summit. That's APEC, of course. But he's going 3 days early to meet with John Howard, and he's also going to meet with opposition leader Kevin Rudd, who may be the next Prime Minister of Australia, and all those sorts of things. But it's creating havoc in Australia. The Sydney is going to be virtually under lockdown for the entire time he's there. I believe the Australian Federal Police have already sent notes to some people who they consider troublemakers, told them to stay out of the city, which sounds a bit suspect if you ask me. But it's going to cost the taxpayers of New South Wales an extra $4 million for security for him coming early. And it's it's going to be a bit of a mission for people trying to get around. But anyway, the survey was released yesterday, and it showed that 60% of Australians had a favorable opinion of the United States, while 39% feel less kindly towards the U.S. But three-quarters of Australians had a favorable opinion of American people. Now, of the Australians who didn't like the U.S., Bush was cited by nearly 70% of the people, and he's the top reason that they have an unfavorable view. And U.S. foreign policy was cited by 63%. And American culture by 41%. But only 1 in 5 Australians cites American people as the reason they have an unfavorable impression of the U.S. So basically, it's all George Bush's fault. It's what it amounts to. But also on the subject of Australia, there was just one little thing in the news I just couldn't resist passing on. It was a story of a fundamentalist church preacher from South Australia who was just convicted of having sex with his two girls. It started in 1991 when they were aged 13 and 15. He claimed that he was trying to teach them how to be wives, essentially, but the judge didn't buy that for a second. He said, "You treated your daughters as your property, using them to satisfy and gratify your sexual urges," which is obviously true. But the man pled guilty, so he'll get a lighter sentence and be eligible for parole in 4 years. But it just goes to show that nutty preachers exist almost all over the world. Right, and now it's on to the comments. And first up was Walt, who said, "Hi, Arthur. Finally got around to voting in the favorite Kiwi poll. I always intended on stopping by your site, but I only think of it when I'm listening to the podcast, and I usually do that at work, where most sites are blocked. I'm wondering why you left probably the most important Kiwi out of voting, or is it a given that Lucy Lawless would prove to be just as popular as Nigel? As always, I'm enjoying the show. Can't wait for you to have more guests on, whether it be Nigel, other relocated Americans, or members of the podcast community." And I said, "I have the same problem, Walt. I often listen to podcasts on my iPod when I'm nowhere near a computer. But don't ever feel obligated to leave a comment. It wouldn't be fun anymore if you did. If I'd included Lucy, then I'd have to include Michael Hurst from Hercules, too. Fairness, you know. So I decided I'd be the only Kiwi media star in the list. Yes, I am kidding. More guests to come." And now, back on episode 35. The previous one was actually on episode 34, I forgot to say. On episode 35, Mike Hipp said, "Hey, Arthur, I threw you a sympathy vote in your little thingamajig." Was that thingamajig? Anyway, I'll revise my statement and say that Mario is my favorite Kiwi that I work with. "Enjoyed your show today. Agreed with many of the points you were making. I do want to clear up one thing, though. Perhaps I don't say this enough. I don't dislike Macs. I used to have them and think they're groovy and stylish. What I dislike is the slavish devotion to their marketing campaign that so many Mac people seem to constantly display. It's sort of a low-grade brainwashing that I see happening, and I'm trying to stop y'all from drinking the Kool-Aid. Love ya. Mean it." And I said, "Actually, I do know you're not anti-Mac, but it doesn't hurt to tell people who may not know otherwise. Which is why I often tell people that I'm joking, even when I think it's obvious. Be that as it may, I actually don't much care for evangelism of any sort, including the Mac sort. I love Macs for what they do, but I'm comfortable using a PC, too, if I have to." And I am kidding. But I certainly won't be drinking anybody's Kool-Aid. Archer said, "I think you did a good job with that music. You should play with it some more. But don't forget to play with iMovie and create a movie for us to see. I like that sign penalty in New Zealand. I wish we had that here. We have something like that, but I don't think it's always followed." And what he's talking about is that you're required to take down signs before Election Day, so they're not sitting around for months on end. He says, "I love the idea of your national taxes paying for teacher salaries. I wonder what the pay is like in New Zealand compared to U.S. teachers. I look forward to finding out about who all those people are in the poll." And I said, "You're too kind about the music," and I use that term loosely. "I really wanted to be able to play with remixes and mashups, but I needed software that could handle loops in standard formats, which Audacity can't do." Audacity is actually what I used to do that Archer mashup I did months ago now. But I still have it if anybody wants it. I'm happy to send you the MP3. Or I might post it one day, who knows? Post it separately. Anyway, I said, "I'll play with more interesting things, including iMovie, in the future. Blogger now supports posting videos, so videos may come sooner rather than later and won't be part of my normal iTunes feed." I just want to say a quick thing about that. Probably the videos on Blogger will eventually get rolled into YouTube or something like that. But for the moment, it's a separate function. But they've also changed Blogger to, essentially, it's to change the RSS feed, which is what, in case you're not very techie, it's what things like iTunes reads in order to download podcasts. Well, they've changed their feed to mean that podcatchers and whatnot can catch your whatever media you put up. And theoretically, that could include podcasts, but it, for the moment, that definitely includes video. And what that means is I can create a separate feed for video and not have it as part of my regular podcast because, at least for the time being, I'm not going to do anything remotely similar to the podcast on video. And so it'll just be part of a separate feed. If I eventually do do a video version, I may or may not include it in the podcast feed. We'll see. I just have to sort of play it by ear and see what works and what doesn't, I guess. But anyway, stay tuned for more on that. And I said also to Archer, "When I get around to the episode on education, I'll try to remember to include a bit on salaries." And I have been thinking more about education because it is way different than in America. And I think it's a big enough topic that I should discuss it sort of all on its own. Next up was Calvin, who said, "I'm going to avoid talking about the music because I'm afraid I couldn't be as solicitous as Archer. But hey, we all have to start somewhere. I kept thinking about people who had bumper stickers for elections. Do people not do that there? We have the rating thing, I think, in San Francisco for local elections, at least from what I can remember. Oh well. Anyway, good show. And long live Curzon, so long as not in pain. And I said, that's a relief somehow to know you don't solicit. Bumper stickers are really rare here. Under the law, though, bumper stickers would have to be removed or covered on election day or the car kept in a garage. And actually, at one stage, I was working with a Labour Party candidate who had his car all painted for the election, and he had to keep it in the garage because he obviously couldn't get it repainted before the election was over. As it happens, he lost, so he did have to get it repainted. Anyway, I also said, however, people can fly ribbons in party colors from their cars, and election day workers can wear rosette, which is a ribbon, sort of like a from a county fair, with a dot on it with the registered party logo. Scrutineers, which we call poll watchers in Illinois, are allowed to wear them in the polling place. Party logos are printed on the ballot, too. This is all for national elections, since local elections are often without parties. So those are the comments this time. Thank you, everyone, for your comments, and always do feel free to leave a comment on my blog, amrens.blogspot.com, or you can send an email to me at amrens@yahoo.com. A couple last things before I go this week. Curzon is still hanging in there. There's more details on this in my blog, and I really don't want to go into it. But today, August 31st, is also Daffodil Day in New Zealand, which is a fundraiser for the Cancer Society. They pick daffodils because they're the first flower to come up in spring. After the cold and basically dead and dreary time of winter, there's this sort of resurrection in the spring, so it's a sign of hope. And they sell these fake poppies that you can, and sometimes real ones, where you can donate money and you get that. And you can also dial an 0900 number and donate $20, as I did. It's a very big deal for me, not just because Curzon has cancer, it actually has nothing to do with that, but because my mother died of cancer. And so every year, I always pause to make sure I give money to this particular cause. And any of you who are smokers, I would urge you to quit, take care of yourselves, try to cut down on animal products as much as possible, especially red meat. And basically try to avoid what is really a pretty horrible way to die. However, that's not where I want to leave this, because that's a really downer. Just two other things. First, I didn't record on Tuesday because Nigel was working on my computer. What he was trying to do was move all my email over from my PC to my Mac. Now, if any of you have ever tried to move email from Outlook to the Mac's mail program, you'll know that there's no straightforward way to do that. And he had to use a special program to do it, and it took forever. It took basically all day. And, I mean, I don't, you know, you can say about your partner that I don't know what I'd do without him, and I don't, but I really don't know what I'd do without him, because I never would have had the patience to sort that out. Now, mind you, it would have been much easier if I had deleted several hundred emails before I did it, because I never throw emails away, I just don't get around to it. But all's well that ends well, and everything's working perfectly now. And actually, I find that this mail application works much better than Outlook ever did. But because it really took so long, and I also wasn't feeling well, I had a bit of sinus problem that day, I just didn't feel like doing anything at the end of the day. I even toyed with asking Nigel to record with me, but he wasn't feeling much better than me, as it happens. So we just gave it a miss. But finally, this week was also Nigel's birthday, and of course, I feel like I get the present every year because I get him. And, you know, when I say I don't know what I'd do without him, I mean that really quite literally. And that's it for this week. Do leave a comment on my blog, amrens.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amrens@yahoo.com, and I'll be back next week, or, well, sometime next week, Tuesday, Friday, I don't know, for more fun and frivolity. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody, and thanks for downloading. Talk to you next week. Bye.